The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Star Crash from 1978. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it an epic adventure set in a galaxy far, far away, or is it too close for comfort? We watched Star Crash from 1978 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features Cast, this time looking at Star Crash from 1978. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by...
Christian Fletcher! Thank you so much, Trevor, for welcoming me back, especially after the last one being my suggestion. So, as in this one being my suggestion, so it's always good to have you up for the challenge.
I almost said that, but I think lately it's been a little bit accusatory, I think, with some of the times we're saying, chosen by me, I'm chosen by Christian. So, yeah, I thought we don't really need to talk about that too much. I mean, obviously, we will say that this one is all your idea.
Which is unusual for me, because I'd never see myself necessarily picking a sci-fi film like this. It's probably our first B-grade movie, I suppose. Our first intentionally B-grade movie that we've actually looked at. That's what I was thinking, too, as I was watching. So I know there's probably been some others.
We did do Dracula 3000, but that's probably more a C or D grade.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's further down the alphabet than that, I think.
quite possibly. But we are looking indeed at Star Crash from 1978. Now, if anyone out there hasn't seen this movie, I do have a little synopsis of it here for you. An outlaw smuggler and her alien companion are recruited by the Emperor of the Galaxy to rescue his son and destroy a secret weapon by the evil count, Zarth Ahn.
Oh, Zarth Ahn. Yeah, I suppose, yeah, that sort of sums it up in a nutshell. The 90 minutes.
Yeah. Pretty much 90 minutes of them trying to rescue the sun and destroy the secret weapon.
And it's funny because I have screened this movie a couple of times in the past, and I've never really done it with my redeeming features hat on, though, so it was a different experience. But my front of my DVD reads, Barbarella meets Star Wars. So when you're going in with a tagline like that, you're not knowing what to expect. And I might need your help for a couple of the Star Wars references, Trevor, because, again, not knowing much about Star Wars, I'm like, is this supposed to be a rip-off of that, this bit or that bit? And I think the whole thing is supposed to be.
At this stage, I shall be generous and say that there are certainly some scenes that appear to be inspired by Star Wars.
Well, doing a little bit of my research, well, I'm sure you've got some trivia, but yeah, apparently it came out before Star Wars was even released or something like that. It was already in production while Star Wars was being released, but yeah, anyway, I've got a couple of notes about that.
That's all good. But before we move into that, we should talk a few bits and pieces. I'll start with awards. Would you believe that this one was actually nominated by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy and Horror Films for a Saturn Award for Best Foreign Film?
Well, I suppose maybe there wasn't too much else out in 1978, so because this being an Italian production, which, you know, as we see in the movie, a lot of the characters are speaking English and a lot of them have been dubbed over, so.
Yeah, that was, let's do some interesting scenes and performances, but don't want to go too far into that just yet. Now, we do also have our Turkey Trivia of course. Where we talk turkey about the movie and go into a bit of trivia. It's all in the title. Now, this one is rated 3.9 out of 10 on IMDb. It had a budget of about $4 million, and it took a whopping $478,000 in the US.
Oh, wow. But you do wonder how wide of a release it would have got being an Italian production. But even being a Star Wars possible imitation, when people were really into seeing this kind of stuff, that is a very disappointing result.
First, well, because I did find out that Christopher Plummer, by far the biggest name in this movie, was paid $10,000 per day whilst on this movie.
And I don't really know how many days he would have been there. I think I read it might have been 3 or a week or something that he filmed for, which I still think is quite a lot considering the amount of times he's actually shown in the movie.
Yeah, well, leading on from that, most of his scenes were shot in a single day.
And I think I read somewhere too, he just needed the money pretty much. I don't think he, and I think I read saying something, oh, playing the, you know, what was it, playing the god of the, or the emperor of the universe, how could I turn that down?
Yeah, no comment.
Yeah, exactly. And he's probably also one of those actors that probably hasn't even seen it either.
Quite possibly. I think we may have seen a few movies where big-name actors involved probably didn't worry because they certainly didn't worry about the performances, but that's another story. Yes, Ben Kingsley, I'm looking at you for Blood Rain. Anyway, moving on back to this movie. An explanation, I suppose, of a costuming choice within the movie is that David Hasselhoff contracted food poisoning during the shooting of the movie, and a production assistant had to fill in for Hasselhoff for a fair share of the scenes, so their character's face is covered by a mask.
Hence the reason why, yeah, earlier on we're seeing an actor that you're like, okay, I bet they're going to be revealed eventually to be David Hasselhoff, and we see him in there, because I'll throw the spoiler in now, he doesn't really appear until about 55 minutes into the movie, so having him sort of star billing, but based off his sort of his pop culture, status nowadays, I can see why he's been promoted a lot with this movie.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, though, I mean, back in 1978, this was definitely very much pre-The Hoff, as we know him now.
Yeah, definitely. But and I'm sure hence the reason his name is now, like, thrown all over the DVD cases being the star because of his star power.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did most of his own stunts and accidentally knocked out an Italian stuntman's tooth on the first day that he was doing the stunts.
Oh, he was either getting really into it or was really incompetent. I don't know.
column A, column B. We shall discuss it as we go along. Now, you may be upset with this, Christian, but apparently a dinosaur sequence was filmed for the movie but deleted for the final cut.
Oh, what a shame.
Sure, that would have been spectacular.
Oh, I know. As if it wasn't already spectacular as it is.
Absolutely. And Carolyn Monroe, as Stella Starr, was originally going to wear a skimpy leather bikini throughout the entire film, but American studio executives stepped in and insisted that she wear less provocative clothing in the second half to make sure that there would be no problems with putting the movie on network television at the time.
Whereas I think that their main problem was probably they needed to get bums on seats in the cinemas, so I don't know, but she was a Playgirl model, I believe, so, you know, I can understand why they were going the angle of the costumes, but I did notice in the second half she was covering up a little bit, so that makes a bit more sense now.
Yes, certainly. I will cover it over. Certainly more sense than something that happened in the early part of the movie anyway. So... Now, this is the redeeming features cast, so we do take a movie with a less than, well, shall we say, stellar reputation and see if it is redeemable. So we do need a baseline. So I have gone to Amazon and I've dug up a review which kind of encapsulates what the lower end of the review spectrum think. This is titled, Not a B Movie, It's an F Movie. Alright, I was expecting a B movie and not an F movie. The movie was so bad it was not even funny. I was actually looking forward to this movie, but this was the worst Roger Corman movie I have seen. I kept watching just because I thought it might get a little better or have some good parts. The only thing I have to say positive about this movie is Carolyn Monroe with her high boots and a space bikini. 1 star.
Well, there's someone who might have given more stars if she didn't cover up.
There we go. an extra bum on the seat, perhaps?
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so an F movie, and I don't know if that's supposed to be a swearing connotation, but that's what I took from that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it could be taken that way quite easily. But from the outset, always get happy. A 91-minute runtime for a movie, that, you know, I think that's always a good start.
Oh, especially one where you're dubious going in about whether you're going to like or dislike this movie. So at least it doesn't outstay, at least these movies don't outstay their welcome too much. But we haven't got into the crux of the movie yet, so that might be another story.
Indeed. And I mean, I did go into this one with a completely open mind. I've got to admit, though, when you mentioned it last week, I actually mixed it up. There is a Turkish Star Wars ripoff, which actually does use footage from Star Wars itself rather than ripping off scenes, that is also quite infamous. So for some reason I was thinking of that one, and then I came to realize the error of my ways.
I do know the movie you mean too, and oh yes. that's another podcast entirely. Actually, I don't even think we'd do that.
I think that would be a very difficult one to get our hands on. But I did notice, though, right from the start, if anyone has seen Star Wars and knows the scene of the spaceship flying over overhead as it comes into shot from the front of the screen, this does have pretty much that same shot, but nowhere near as epic.
Oh yeah, and even looking more a lot like just even more like models floating in the air, pretty much. I don't know, it was just, not being knowing much about this, I just can't help but looking at it as this giant bit of Lego.
I know. Look, TV shows in 1978 had bed-looking spaceships in this movie.
And I think I read a thing saying, God, you think they would have been bothered to paint it? Like, it just seemed like they've just made this white model and just left it as is. But, look, I was a bit jarred, actually, because I thought it was a problem with my DVD copy. But as soon as I pressed play, the movie goes straight in, no logo or anything, straight into this really jumpy at the start. It must have been from an old print of the ship entering the screen. So already I'm going, is this the movie? Has it started?
Well, yeah, there were very minimal opening titles, so let's put it that way. So you didn't miss much, Christian, trust me.
Oh, cool.
but when it cuts to Stella and Acton sitting in their smuggling ship of such great design. Actually, I'm jumping forward.
Yes, you forgot about the... I was going to say, I've got the guys in the lame costumes.
The guys in the lame costumes.
Brown lame costumes.
Yep, doing some amazing acting. And I'm thinking the dialogue was written by someone who didn't understand science fiction and was just throwing in words that he thought sounded science fiction-y. But none of it made sense.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing. I'm going to jump ahead too. I was just going to say the tone ends up sort of changing too with the whole, it doesn't know whether it wants to be this straight sci-fi thing or this comedy. So it's a bit unusual. So you're getting this feeling that it's trying to also imitate or take the piss out of it, I suppose. But it's also, yeah, it's quite strange. But one thing that sort of got me from the first outset, Trevor, was, the scene with these guys in the brown costumes was the impressive set design. Okay, it might not be impressive by sci-fi buff standards, but I was impressed by its, the thought put into the sets anyway.
Yeah, they did make good use of sets that, did look sci-fi, cheap sci-fi. And certainly once the ship got invaded by the color red, that was effective in its own very cheap looking way.
If you can believe that the color red or these red lights are monsters, but anyway.
Yes, oh, but it was working on their mind, Christian.
Oh, I know. I think it was just a budget restraint there.
Oh, I did like, actually, during the opening credits, I forget if they were the writers or it was a film. I mean, it was a Roger Corman film. But there was also this couple that featured in the opening credits known as the, I just said, Go the Washburgers.
Oh, yeah. It was like Nat or something Washburger. And it was a very jarring name to have up on opening credits for production, actually.
Yeah. So Nat Washburger was involved in the screenplay, but I think it was like a couple. Only Nat is credited in IMDb, so maybe they thought they had to have the husband's name in there to give it some more credibility.
It's just like it's been put together by Ma and Pa that live down the road or something, or funded by that. Yeah, that's strange. But I don't know When do we get the open? Oh no, we get the opening scroll just before the credits. You know, you mentioned the opening shot of the ship being, you know, very traditional, I suppose, with movies of this time. But the opening scroll is also another thing that we've seen. I think we've even seen in a few other movies we've watched as well. But it was, I don't know if it was me, but it was going too bloody fast to even read. And it was almost felt so convoluted that I ended up just going, you know what? I'll work it out.
Yeah. I mean, the opening scroll. I mean, made famous, I suppose, by Star Wars and many times imitated or parodied in most cases. Here, I think it was meant to be serious, but yeah, if you could actually read it, mind you, it didn't make all that much sense. But, you know, if you wanted a bit of exposition before the movie started proper, you could always pause it if you felt inclined. I didn't feel inclined.
That's kind of what I did. Didn't pause it, I mean. So we got what we saw. But anyway, so I knew they'd fill us in eventually.
Absolutely. But when it did get to acting as Stellar, I'll get another bit now. The opening scene, even before any dialogue, they kept looking like they were about to say something. It was really bugging me. It would cut to them, and they'd be doing something, and then it would turn their head a bit and open their eyes slightly, and then nothing.
Oh, yeah, because her little sidekick, was it Akron or whatever? Yeah, he kept turning his head, because he'd do this thing where wherever he talked, he'd sort of put his head on the side or something like that. But yeah, I know what you mean. In this scene, they're kind of all like, huh? Huh? Something's about to happen. Must have just been an editing decision. It's like it actually did have dialogue in it, but they're like, oh god, this movie's already convoluted as it is.
And then when Acton finally spoke, it was, ha ha, the cops! Oh. And they were just so enthusiastic about their opening lines. I'm thinking, settle down, aren't you guys meant to be on the run from these? You seem way too excited about the fact that the cops have caught you. And that you've only got a minimal chance of surviving hyperspace. You are so, so enthusiastic and cheerful about it. It's entertaining, yes. Does it make sense? No.
And the thing is about it too is, that's what I was saying before about the whole comedy element as well. It's like they're trying to sort of put jargon in that possibly was like cool and hip to us about, you know, like I've got to catch me a dirty cop and things like that, which I thought was quite out of place, actually.
Indeed. I mean, so much that just happened. Like, they go into hyperspace, they come out, and then they just eject most of their ship and fly off in this little bit that popped out. It's like, and again, yeah, Not a problem in the world with doing that. It's like, oh, we've just got to get rid of most of our ship. I'm sure we won't need that later.
Oh god! And like little lines, like I think it's in this part where she goes, "What in the universe is that?" or something like that. And you're just like, oh, okay. So this is going to be this type of film. It's going to be this kind of dialogue.
Indeed. And then when they rescue the survivor from the color red from earlier, and they bring him on, and he's just lying on this bench, just moving his mouth, making no sounds, and yet Acton can understand every word he's saying, and is basically just saying, oh, he says there were red monsters. It's like, how do you know what he's saying? He's just opening his mouth nonsensically.
Oh, yeah. No, it was rather strange. But, hey, these are our two leads, and we have to deal with it. So, which is quite strange, because actually, I'll say it while I think of it, you're expecting the Akron character to be played by, say, David Hasselhoff, and I must admit, you're still spending the whole time going, when's he gonna turn up? But as we're finding out, it's still a little while off yet. But as we're seeing, they're pretty much throwing in as many sci-fi tropes and special effects as possible, whether handled badly or well.
Well, I'll tell you what was handled well. It's basically like I'm racing through this, but this is the pace of the start of the movie. We get to see our bad guy, Count Darth Arn, pretty quickly, and he's got a full red cape, a bad guy beard, and a widow's peak, and the bad guy moustache. They didn't know where to stop on this guy.
Oh, and he had to do the typical, you know, the cape throwing as he walks away. And, yeah, let's just say they did whatever they could so that if this was ever played as a silent film, we knew exactly who he was.
Yes. They'd leave no mystery whatsoever where he is just... I don't know, what was he even commanding his cronies to do? I mean, he seemed pretty confident that no one would ever find his weapon.
Well, I think...
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, it just seemed like at the start he was very much... They were just trying to establish that there was a bad guy there, you know? Because a lot, as we're saying, a lot is happening in that first little, you know, sort of 10 minutes when they're trying to set everything up, and I think they really just wanted to establish, okay, we've got a bad guy there as well.
And in the first 10 minutes, making sure that Stella gets in her space bikini when the cops do catch them and they're put on trial, and then she gets shipped off to a labor camp where everybody else is dressed from head to toe in overalls, and she's still in her space bikini.
And then, but I love how they're supposed to have been doing hours of work. What were they pushing again? Was it this? I don't know if it was, was it the bit where they had this giant ball or something that they were pushing? I can't remember if it was that bit or not. But yeah, they're all like covered head to toe in dirt, and she seems quite immaculate still.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't actually seem to do much work. She kind of just does a token effort and then is just like, I've been working for 16 hours.
And then it's just straight ahead. She's like, nope, we're going to plan to escape. Cause so we get the, you know, we get the ideas, you know, fairly early on that Stella Starr's a bit of a fighter and a bit of a, you know, isn't going to take any crap. Even if for 16 hours, she hasn't been doing much.
No. Making sure that her bikini straps are in the right spots to make sure that this movie remains PG.
But I don't know. Oh, yeah, again, I'm very confused, actually, where we're up to now. Oh, yeah, we jumped ahead to the to when she got kidnapped. But I don't know. Is this around the time where we see the stop-motion robots?
Oh, not quite. Not quite. I don't think we're quite up to the to that just yet. I think, yeah, as Stella escapes and finds out that she didn't even need to escape because the same cops that arrested her are actually on the way to get her out anyway, so that they can have her help, because she's one of the best pilots in the galaxy, and a smuggler. Her Solo! and then they go and pick up Acton to join them in their merry crew of mismatched bad actors.
Oh, gosh, talk about a merry crew, right? And, yeah, it ends up becoming quite a road trip movie of a different kind.
Yeah, so I think as they enter the... Oh, I can't even remember the name of the zone. There was a particular name of the zone that they could not go into, but, of course, they have to fly into it to save the crew of the ship that was attacked by the secret weapon and find the son of Christopher Plummer's very nonplussed emperor.
Yeah. it's like he filmed everything. It's like he's whispering every line, like when he was playing it. It was very, yeah, it was like he really wasn't putting too much extra effort in it. And especially considering the first time we see him, he's a hologram. I'm like, is this how you got around being able to shoot in one day?
He's putting just enough in to kind of sound sincere about what he's saying. That was the impression I got. So in a way, that's quite a fine line to tread. So you can tell that Christopher Plummer is a good actor, even though he doesn't appear to be giving it his full go in this.
And possibly just doing it for the money, let's just say.
Yes. At $10,000 a day, he needs to put some effort in for that.
Definitely. So, okay, we mentioned the band of misfits, I suppose. But, yeah, we end up... Stella ends up teaming up with... I don't know if this is when the police robot comes in. Now, this is a character that we see quite a few times through the film and ends up going on the quest with her, but not necessarily the best sidekick for them to have chosen.
Yeah, I think some of that may come from the dubbing. I mean, cause as a robot, I mean, really, they could make him say absolutely anything for this. I believe it was L, the robot.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But he seemed to be, I don't know, early on they were trying to make him, I don't know, the comic relief, and you're like, this is so out of place. Like, you're trying to make these, because, you know, you've got the typical, what do they say, the space westerns or the serials or whatever of yesteryear. I don't know if it was supposed to be going in the tone of that kind of stuff, but I actually think it's what you said, Trevor. I think it might have even been dubbed over in a really bad American or whatever accent he's using voice later on.
I'm pretty sure it was just somebody who they sat in a bench and they said, sat in a room and said, read these lines with absolutely no context of what was going on. That comes across so clearly, that the disconnect between even the performance of Stella and the tone in which the robot replies to a lot of things is just like, yeah, they were not in the same room at any point in time.
And it's like he always has to use things like when they're in that, when they start, I think that's when they start their quest, and they're in that little ship together, and he's like, oh, my seatbelt stock, and just little lines like that where you're going, oh, ha-ha, we're supposed to think that it's so hilarious that a robot can't fix his seatbelt. And then I think there was a part two where he's nervous. Water makes me nervous. And you're like, you're a robot. Since when was nervousness built into your system?
Yeah. I didn't really take to L all that much. So when they found the first escape pod and were captured by Amazons, who promptly shot him, I didn't mind personally.
Oh, well, you mentioned the coming across the Amazons. That felt like such a scene that was put in there to almost make Stella Starr not feel out of place, or not feel as scantily clothed.
Yeah, well, she was definitely still in a space bikini, so the Amazons were wearing a little bit more than her. But, I mean, even leading up to that, the dialogue that they just started using, I suppose, once the scene was set, like, every line was basically explaining something to someone so that they could actually say what was happening in the movie and what people were meant to know. It was just all done by explaining what it is. And when they're explaining the star systems and they suspect that they may have to go to the unknown planet Uranus. And again, the unknown planet has a name?
Yeah, exactly.
That unknown?
And I think it was, like Uranus or something like that. You're like, ooh, you're really creative coming up with a real different sounding name for that.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. I just heard Uranus.
Oh, no, you're right. I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, well, even to us, yeah, that was really unknown. If it was that. But yeah, I thought that was strange too. So unknown, we've got a name for it.
Yeah, and then when they landed on these planets in this forbidden section that no one ever goes to, they just basically land and go, what's that over there? Oh, look, it's the exact thing that we're looking for.
How convenient.
Oh.
And the thing that sort of, and it sort of happens a few times, probably I think it would have happened up to this point, but yeah, well, a few times whenever they go out of the ship, let's just say, there's really bad, look, I can appreciate the era that came out with out of, but the really bad screen projection, it was just, again, I was looking at this going, is this my copy? and then realizing that, no, this is the tackiness of probably the original production and how it would have looked on the big screen as well. So just a lot of shots that didn't sort of line up.
Yeah, there was a lot of forced perspective and some very bad overlay going on. So yeah, it wasn't your copy, Christian. I think this is probably not a movie that would benefit greatly from a 4K HD remake.
Well, the funny thing is this has just been released as a 2-disc Blu-ray edition, so I'm interested to see what kind of quality. I'm surprised they've got 2 discs worth of special features to fill it out with, but anyway.
Maybe that dinosaur scene is very, very long.
Yeah, maybe. Actually, I think it did say scenes that were cut out. There you go. It's probably in that.
Oh, great. More Star Crash.
Yeah,
yay.
Great. I won't make you endure that. But again, you know, I could, as I said, I can appreciate the era it came out with, but a lot of those effects, yeah, and like you were saying too, are even quite cheap for, even by 70s TV standards. And like, and then there was something any time, she did it a couple of times, Stella Starr floated out of the ship, I just couldn't help but laugh. It was just so funny. And it was just, I think it was the fact that she was wearing these really, not, she wasn't wearing the bikinis at the time, but she was wearing those really baggy sort of, It was either she'd wear a space bikini or a total opposite, and this the most baggiest, I don't know, contamination outfit, I was going to say, it looks like, that she could possibly wear.
Yeah, but a lot of times that those suits still had like clear plastic, so you could still make out the flesh underneath. So they couldn't completely cover her up, but you know, at least they made some effort to kind of imply that she could be protected from open space or later on an ice planet by wearing something more than just a bikini.
Oh, yes, the ice planet. Oh gosh.
But even before we go to the ice planet and I mean, at this point, I'd already screamed at the movie to stop explaining everything to me. I just like, stop it! And we find out the robot who... It's like the Amazons knew who the robot was and shot him, but didn't actually explain why they hated him so much. But then he turns out not to be dead, so he can rescue Stella from the Amazons. And then they have their guardian chase them down the beach. And it's just like, oh, look, it did just get dodgier with some of the worst stop motion some of the worst stop motion animation I think I've seen for a very, very long time. Combined with a very, very bad overlay on the film.
Oh, gosh. And those stop-motion robots. Like, yeah, you can appreciate the... it had that real Jason and the Argonauts, or that... What is it? The Ray Harryhausen sort of feel about it, you know? Like, that, where you think that by the late 70s, yeah, they wouldn't be resorting to necessarily, techniques like that, or making them look a little bit better. Anyway, this really made it a low-budget film, these shots.
Yeah, I was looking and thinking how... And again, like, they had this giant woman robot thing, but again, it was like they made the model and didn't bother painting it.
Yeah.
It's just white.
And it does give you that feeling that, yeah, this was rushed as quick as possible to cash in on this this Star Wars film that was about to come out. Actually, that was a bit of trivia. Sorry, I didn't say earlier. Apparently, because the movie hadn't come out, they used the novelization that had come out at the time. And apparently the creators sat down with a novelization from Star Wars and pretty much put together their own film based off that. So you can kind of see a little bit now where they're coming from.
So I'm guessing the fact that Acton suddenly has this bit where he's like throwing neon lights between his hands and displaying stuff just out of nowhere, he suddenly has powers. So I'm guessing that's when they got into the book about Force powers. They were actually already writing the script at this point. And then suddenly it's like, oh, we need someone who has powers. Acton. Yeah, he's not doing much so far. He's just sitting in the ship while Stella and the robot go out and do stuff. We'll give him powers.
Yeah, we'll get him to do something. And we'll give him sort of... We'll stop for a little bit, give the film a bit of a real moment where he's playing with the lights. Oh, look, how funny is that? And then, yeah, it's really just, as you said, giving him something to do. But that's what I mentioned earlier, I think, is you kind of expect Stella to have teamed up with, say, Acron for going out, you know, for the exploration rather than with Elle. It just seemed like a really bad combination. It seemed like Acron was really just wasted sitting there in the ship.
Yeah, I mean, these guys were obviously partners in crime for a very long time, so you assume they work well together. And I've got to look this up. We keep saying the name differently. Okay, A-K-T-O-N.
Oh, it's Acton. Okay.
Acton. I'm just going to get this right now. You know, he's got powers, and quite significant powers, as we find out later on, yet he just sits on the ship. What's the point of giving him the powers in the first place, even though they come in handy later on down the track, funnily enough?
It's got to be that real Wizard of Oz angle, you know, the red shoes have been able to help you the whole time, but you've got to learn your lesson first before we send you home. So yeah, I thought that was quite strange. I really think she could have teamed up with him and done the exploration, rather than having a Playgirl model and a robot with a really bad dub. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the chemistry or the space western that you're really wanting to follow the adventures of.
Yeah, every time, like when they got to the ice planet, and again, it was Elle and Stella going out and exploring the ice planet, where apparently, if they're not back by sunset, they'll immediately freeze. I believe that was the thing. I mean, not much has happened. But this time they don't manage to land right next to the thing that they're after. They actually have to walk a fair way to get to the crash ship. Nothing else happens. They walk to the crash ship, and then we get this very long shot of them walking back while we find out that the other police officer is working for Emperor Zarth. Oh, no, no.
My God. And yeah.
Acton actually has to do something.
So put down those lighting effects and help us.
Indeed. With the thing, oh, no, Acton's being killed. Well, that was easy. Oh, no, of course he's not dead, because this is that sort of movie. And where we're going to kill a character, make it appear for all intents and purposes he is actually dead, and then make them not dead.
And then, because I think it was the guy, I just got him here, the green guy, the green guy that ends up being the traitor. You know, the guy in the skin tight ground brown bodysuit.
That's the one.
Oh my god, talk about, can I just say that is the worst costume choice ever. For anyone. I don't know. I just couldn't. Actually, do you remember we did Santa Claus Conquers the Martians? I don't know if you remember what the Martians wore. Those brown outfits just. Yeah. Okay. Just didn't work at all.
Yeah. We've never done Santa Claus Conquers the Martian. Don't make this another Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, I know. Gosh.
I've still never seen that movie. Oh, dear. I probably shouldn't have admitted that. but the green guy. Thor, which I found quite funny, given the fact that the new Thor movie is about to come out.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't help but laugh every time there was reference to that.
And Acton stays dead long enough for Thor to contact Vathon and then find out that he can't make the ship go and leave everyone behind. So we get the dramatic standoff with Stella and El trapped outside as Thor refuses to let them on. As it's about to be sunset, oh no, how will they survive? By robot Ex Machina, and, the robot will keep Stella alive overnight. Yay! And then Acton gets to use his powers to revive her the next day, because he's got powers.
Again, it's like, we could have, so many bad mistakes with this where they could have used so many different things. But I must admit, another part that made me really laugh, Trevor, was as Stella's being herded out as a frozen ice block. And they just walk her in. I couldn't help but have a little chuckle with that, actually. But in her Thor out scene, I suppose.
Thor, just one of those things where they just have the shots of her with slightly less blue makeup. Just over time.
Oh, yeah, because it kind of overlaid over the top of each shot, so it was kind of like, we'll film her now as an ice block, and we now look as she's thawed out. So, yeah, probably not the best effect there, but by now we're not worrying too much about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and when Acton uses his powers to thaw her out, it's like, what are Acton powers exactly? Just whatever is needed at the time? Is that what his power is?
And then whenever he's not using, he just sits there and makes funny shapes out of it. And that's the thing that seems like in this movie that a lot of times when they could have done something a little bit different or put some possibly a bit more effort into some other area, it would have been better than them using, say, just lights to represent bad things or another thing too, actually, I didn't mention earlier, is that it seemed like it was more they were going the effect of a space disco rather than just a sci-fi film, with the whole use of all the different coloured lights as well in the backgrounds was something that was quite, I assume, not a regular occurrence in sci-fi films.
No. I mean, in a way, blinking coloured lights, I suppose, were a staple of sci-fi for quite some time. But this certainly had fun with its lighting effects, probably because they were the easiest to do.
Exactly. And it was 1978 at the height of disco, so I could see a lot of that pop culture being having infiltrated this movie as well.
Indeed. But we are amazing that we're racing through the movie, but seriously, not a lot happens. So we...
Yeah, exactly. We're summing it up better than the movie is, and we're not actually saying every single thing that happens.
The characters will happily explain it to you all in much greater detail. Because, when they finally land on the third planet, and we find out that lasers, as we found out earlier, lasers don't actually hurt El at all, because he survived being shot by the Amazons. But mind you, hit him with a club made out of a bone, and his head just comes right off. Wow.
Oh, yeah. I think he should have stayed dead, possibly, with the Amazon women. I don't know.
And then we get to see the mysterious stranger in the mask who scares off all the primitive guys. I wonder who that might be.
It might be the actor that we still haven't seen yet at about 50 minutes into
indeed,
the movie.
Indeed. And then we find out what I have heard, but didn't actually believe until it happened. That is true that David Hasselhoff is the best actor in this movie. Just let that sink in. Don't rush through it. Let that sink in.
He definitely was putting his all in, let's just say, and especially at the point of his career, I suppose, he was doing whatever he can to go to the next stage. So I don't really know what his background was before this and why he was in an Italian production, but I definitely think he's giving it all. And yeah, he is the best actor in the whole film, and it's almost a shame that we aren't seeing him more, just to give it a bit more of, I don't know, a realness.
Yeah, I mean, it really is... I suppose a bit of mystery. I think at this point he was largely a TV actor prior to Star Crash. He was in Revenge of the Cheerleaders, where he played the character of the lovely title Boner.
Oh, great. Maybe he just had to get away from that title, that being his last thing on his resume.
Well, last film probably credit. Slightly better than being the parking attendant in an episode of Police Story. Or British Guard in an episode of the Dean Martin Show. That was his. Those were his acting chops prior to Star Crash.
Oh no! So he's either he was either trying to have a breakthrough with this, or was just continuing the way he was going. I'm not sure, but yeah, as you said, Hoff seems to be a welcome change at this point. Yeah, anyway,
trying to earn his acting chops. Let's put it that way. I will give him. I will give him points. He certainly did actually make an effort in this movie, which the people dubbing the robot certainly didn't do.
And I think it's pretty much at this point that we've got Acton, the Hoff. I think they call them the Hoff. Acton, the Hoff, and Stella pretty much team up now as the new team that's going to destroy now. And I think it's around this time that the stop motion robots come in a few more times, and you're like, okay, guys, yeah. Already.
We miss a bit where Acton, of course, the Hoff and Stella get overwhelmed by the cavemen yet again. And then Acton suddenly actually does something and turns up with a lightsaber.
Oh, yes. And from memory, it was it's a green lightsaber. That's right. So it's even going the same color as the Star Wars.
Yeah, I just meant he's got a lightsaber now. Wow. That is lifted wholesale from Star Wars. Congratulations. Everything else has kind of been going around the outside without being lifted wholesale. And then you put in a lightsaber. Well done.
Exactly. Hey, they didn't rip off main shots like the Italians. Turkish Star Wars. But still, this may have well have been as an equal of a rip-off. But yeah, no, I knew as soon as I saw that, I'm like, here we go.
Yes, we get the lightsaber just as Acton finally decides to do something useful.
And it's always revolving something to do with some light thing, yeah, which of course we find out his sort of powers or his different things are. But yeah, it's, again, it's almost like the character of Hoff, the Hoff and Acton could have been merged together some way and made it a bit more of, I don't know, rather, yeah, it's quite strange. It is almost like they did split the parts or something like that.
What I really found perplexing, because this does come relevant in a moment, but I think a bit earlier on, when it's revealed that Acton can actually see the future, but he doesn't tell anybody about it, because you're not allowed to change the future because it's against the law. It's like... Okay, but you chose, by that implication, the implication was that he chose to stay on the ship because he saw that Thor was going to betray them. So he changed the future, breaking the law using his own power. Is that what we're getting at? But doesn't explain why he stayed on the ship at any other time in the movie.
Yeah, and why he wasn't doing possibly more that could contribute to... Hey, the entire movie.
But then we do get to the bit where the crappy assassin robots of crappy animation turn up for a terrible fight scene between Acton and them, where Acton gets struck across the arm and gets cut on the arm, which appears to be a fatal blow. And it's just like, he knew it was coming, but he couldn't change his fate because it wasn't convenient for plot purposes for him to change his fate this time, unlike last time where he decided to actually act on his knowledge of the future.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's against the law.
No, I have to let these people, let these robots kill me because I've already seen it in the future.
And I don't know if it was him or the Christopher Plummer character. I think it was Acton. It has a line where he says, "Don't worry, I'll live forever," because he's immortal as well. So I don't know if it was him. that said something like that, and you're like, yeah, they just keep... It's like, don't reveal so much about this character at the end. You could have possibly used this throughout the film and not done this big
reveal. Yeah, I mean, we don't see him again in the movie after that. But yeah, the implication that he will come back in some way at some indeterminate time in the future, that doesn't occur in Star Crash.
Strange. I was going to say, maybe it's in Star Crash 2, but that's a movie totally unrelated to this.
I don't want to think about that too much, Christian, because I would like to not have nightmares at height. Oh, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Good idea. anyway, so... but I don't know if it's around the point where they start... Again, I'm probably jumping ahead too much too, but when we start to actually see Christopher Plummer in the flesh, not as just some hologram. But I think it was pretty much straight after that fight scene, I think it was, where they reunite them together. No, there's a few other... That's pretty much, quite the long fight.
Yeah, they kind of... Because good old Zarth Arn, I have to say it that way, pretty much sends out a message letting Emperor Christopher Plummer know that his son's on the planet, which of course turns out to be the planet hiding the secret weapon. Coincidence! And so Christopher Plummer is flying his imperial ship, like entire kingdom, to this planet. Which, of course, ties in with Zarth Arn's plan to use the weapon to obliterate the Emperor and allow him to take over the entire universe, because, of course, he wants to. And, yeah, so that when we do actually get to see... They make it back to the ship, and we do actually get to see the Emperor in the flesh, where he's also reconstructed El. Great.
You're like, yeah, great, thanks for that. Just when we thought things were getting better? Hang on, I don't think so. But and of course, it's funny how Christopher Plummer, as the Emperor, has to have his big throne as well, too. Like, sitting rather weirdly on it, too. It was quite strange.
That throne really did not look comfortable. It had all sorts of weird, chunky angles.
And it's probably like he's going, I'm a serious actor, and you're making me sit on this. But yeah, so... But at least he got a chance to actually have something to do with the rest of the cast as well. It wasn't just a scene on his own.
Yeah, not that it changed his delivery in any way. It was still a very, yes, now we must do what we can to stop Darth. I said Darth. It's not Darth. Count. Count Zarth Arn. For the protection.
Oh, God. And
of all people.
That's pretty much exactly the way he did it too,
was,
Trevor.
And it annoyed the hell out of me because... Yeah, like I said, this movie is bam, 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 stuff, 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 all terribly animated, acted, and just generally poorly made. And then along comes Christopher Plummer and starts lulling you to sleep.
It's like he's thinking he's coming in to try and save the movie, but he's actually just contributing more to... Actually, I don't want to reveal too much, but yeah, the thoughts on...
Yeah, it's just like, Christopher... You would have served this movie far better if you had just chewed the scenery. That would be something I would pay to see.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the thing. But it's almost like they see it as being too small of a role to have been sort of a scene-chewing one. But, yeah, I think in the few times we could have seen him, I think he could have possibly saved the movie. But it wasn't
to be. Yeah, he turns up, does very little, says very little... And takes a long time saying it.
But I must admit, it is quite funny to see Christopher Plummer as the Hofstad. I don't know. There was a part that just made me think, this is strange.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Emperor of the Universe, your son is the Hof? Like, wow. Anyway.
You gave birth to Bona from that movie, a cheerleader movie I mentioned earlier?
Was that the guy that was a parking attendant in the police story?
I've seen him somewhere before. Oh dear, now we're getting too distracted, aren't we?
I know. But it is a very distracting movie because, as you said, so much is happening at different times. And it's always going to lead up to some kind of explosion as well, too. Like, I think he says, soon we will explode.
Something like something. That.
It's just so calm about it.
And the only way they can destroy the weapon is by essentially... firing the Emperor's entire city at the weapon. They have Stella and El actually pilot a whole city at the Emperor's weapon. whilst soldiers in bad uniforms lying in tubes get fired into each other's spaceships so that they can fight.
And it's just a whole heap of these weird shots of these, or shots of scenes of all these ships and all these missiles being launched and stuff that seemed to go on for long,
I felt. It really kept going on, and then they cut to the inside of the fighting, and it would always just be, you know, people running around, and then you get a close-up of one of them getting hit with a laser bolt, a puff of smoke, and them going, just, even their death performances were awful. I just couldn't believe. How can you consistently make every death in this movie so bad?
Oh, I know. It's almost like they haven't watched one single sci-fi movie, or have watched so many that they've thrown in anything they can think of, whether it works or not.
Indeed. But, of course, at the end of the day, the Elle and Stella managed to successfully pilot the city and crash it into the Count's weapon/spaceship. And that explosion goes for a very long time.
Oh, I know. And it's, you know, isn't it from memory an explosion? Pretty much, if you can say this, an explosion seen from every possible angle. That's what it felt like to me.
It wasn't even a very good explosion.
I know. It was almost like they were so proud of it, and they're like, oh, we're going to make sure everyone really sees this.
Really drive home just how important the destruction of this is by showing every possible angle of this crappy model having sparks and smoke appear from it. We're going to do this. It just kept going and going and going. Like, come on. And then, of course, we had the Hoff. The Hoff flies in trying to find Stella to save her. And we get that lovely shot of Stella floating in space.
Oh, I can't help but laugh when I see that.
And she's just got this, even before he turns up to save her, she's still got this grin on her face like everything's great. You're marooned in space. You don't even know if the Hoff is coming to catch you. Why are you smiling?
Because she's Stella Starr. Oh, no, I think I even read that the movie was going to be called The Adventures of Stella Starr, and I'm like, yeah, the eternally happy Stella Starr, even when she's still waiting for someone to come and save her.
The bikini of Stella Starr, I think that would have gotten more bums on seats. Yes,
more bums on seats, definitely.
but and again, like you've mentioned again, just with the stupid dialogue from Elle, like when they come back on board the airlock, and I'm assuming Stella and the Hoff are meant to be having a romantic moment, and they're talking to each other in this slightly sweet way, and then it's just like the robot walks in and goes, huh? What? Huh? Why are you even doing that? I don't understand what the purpose is. You just had this person sitting in a room by himself reading confused noises that he has no idea what the context is, and put it in a spot where there is no context for it. What are you doing?
Oh, strange. And you get the feeling that in a film like this, it's like they're trying to work out how they can really make it have an ending, when really we haven't got any sort of compassion for these characters. You know, we don't really care what happens.
No. But we do get an ending with a very sincere, extended speech from the Emperor Christopher Plummer.
So for those who aren't already asleep from him having lulled you, this will be the final one for you.
I mean, if you're so pumped up after that explosion and reunion, you know, this will help you calm down so you can just leave the movie calmly. Without being, you know, without having to rush outside and try to recreate the scenes for yourself, because that won't do anyone any good. You need Christopher Plummer to calm you down.
Oh no, yeah, there's just something about it, and that's just, you're like, end the movie for God's sake. We've had enough.
Yes, and it fades out with the promise that evil may one day return.
Oh, and we're like, oh, you know, it has returned, possibly in the form of the movie. I don't know. But yeah, so our thoughts are starting to come through a little bit, but, you know, we don't want to ruin too much. But yeah, that's pretty much the movie in a nutshell. And Trevor, I think you've managed to do a good job of helping us get through it without having to explain every single thing.
I know. Just stop explaining stuff. Tell the truth, like the closing credits, you know, I know I watched them all the way to the end, but seriously, I am coming up a blank. I don't know if the music was in any way notable or if there was anything particularly interesting happening in the credits. It's just like Christopher Plummer finished talking, the end. That's all I've got.
And where they could have done something a bit more exciting with the credits, I think it was just, you know, the basic white on black and of course the regular occurrence of Mr. and Mrs. Washburger or Washburger, whatever their names are. But yeah, you didn't miss much, Trevor. I can't even really remember the music either. But yeah, so there we go. For an end credits, they weren't too memorable.
No, they weren't. So that does bring us to the end of Star Crash. Whew. And wow. You did choose this movie, Christian. It has come to that time, so I shall go first with my thoughts as to anything redeemable in this movie. And really, look, when I started watching this movie, the bad effects, the terrible acting, and the blatant expository dialogue, I did find it funny at first. However, the novelty wore off pretty quick. So once that happened, it ended up being painful to sit through, and so much of it was just straight out boring. And honestly, I can't say much more. I mean, everything in this movie was terrible, and even like, you know, the big exciting explosive climax, I was fighting to stay awake. So you can imagine how I felt when Christopher Plummer came back after all that. This is an awful movie, Christian, and definitively it is not redeemable.
I was kind of getting the vibe that might have been where you were going, Trevor. So, now, I did mention I have screened this film a couple of times in the past. Look, they have been at pop-up venues at bars, so I've probably had a few drinks while I've been watching it. So, I couldn't remember a lot of the stuff that had happened until I watched it again recently. So, yeah, look, it's easy for me talking about a sci-fi film is always so hard because not knowing much about the genre, I never know whether it's supposed to be intentional or taken seriously or supposed to be a bit of fun. But one thing that definitely impressed me from the outset was the uniqueness of each sort of location or set, you know, even though, as you said, it wasn't done particularly well, and we knew that it was a low-budget sort of B-grade film from the outset, but I did like the fact that they mixed it up every set, you know, that there was something quite different and that the set design was quite unique. And I must admit, there's a few ideas in there that I'd like to steal for my future nightclub that would be coming quite handy. But once I realised that the plot seemed so, not convoluted, but more like I just, not getting it, but just wasn't sort of finding any sort of interest in it, I started to look at it more as a campy film, just to sort of sit back and watch in that respect. But whilst it did start off, yeah, possibly being quite tongue-in-cheek and being trying to be funny and have comic relief, I just think that it outstayed its welcome quite fast. So this is pretty much the poor man's Star Wars, and I think even putting it on that sort of status is probably even bad. But it's got a lot of tack and cheese, but it does add to the appeal in some respects, but it's just something that can't be sustained for a whole movie. I could feel the influence of Star Wars and a lot of 70s pop culture, but yeah, I think they could have gone something a bit more like a Flash Gordon, where it was a bit more cleverly and tongue-in-cheek as well. So I think you can tell from my thoughts, yeah, Trevor, it's not a redeemable film at all.
There we go. Star Crash. Not redeemable. And I intend to never let it enter my viewing circle again.
I promise I will not make you watch it again.
Good. Thank you for that. And look, we may not have redeemed this movie, but this is the Redeeming Features podcast, so we do like to finish on a high note where we can. So, we may not have redeemed the movie, but this movie, yes, even this movie, has its fans. So, I've actually gone back to Amazon, and I've dug up a review from the other end of the scale to see what fans of this movie think. This one is titled, Inspired by Star Wars, but has its own original charm and story. Star Crash is a low-budget sci-fi adventure film with colourful special effects and starring the beautiful Carolyn Munro, who leads her small team across the galaxy and planets to defeat the evil leader. The movie was clearly inspired by Star Wars, but has its own original charm and story. The shout factory transfer looks great, with plenty of sharpness. I normally cut those bits out, sorry about that. Robots, laser battles, women warriors, droids, laser swords, monsters, alienoids, and plenty of fun to be had for viewers who enjoy low-budget sci-fi cinema. 5 stars.
So they do exist, wow. But again, sounds like someone who was just a bit of a Caroline Munro fan and ran with it. But yeah, you did mention Shout Factory. They're the company that has released the 2-disc Blu-ray editions. So interesting.
Yeah. Well, I suppose good that the fan of the movie is also the fan of the people bringing in the Blu-ray.
Oh, that's good. And apparently it's even got 2 audio commentaries, but not from anyone from the movie, just a diehard fan. So, interesting.
I think I also read that this one is featured in a Mystery Science Theater 3000 at some point as well.
Oh, okay.
And I've just tempted myself to watch that. Bad River! Bad!
At least you know they'll make it feel a bit better, but yeah, it'd be interesting to hear them tackling
it. Very true. So, anyway, I think it's time for us to move on from Star Crash, Christian.
Oh, this crash wreck. Yes, definitely. So, I'm interested to see how you're going to, excuse the pun, redeem this for us for the next film.
Well, I'll give it a try. And, hey, look, I'm actually going to go nice and recent again for our next movie, as well as heading back into what has been a bit of a regular genre for this podcast due to it being a never-ending pit from what I've seen. Now, I haven't actually seen this movie, so I will also be going in fresh. So this is a movie that came out in 2016, and for a while there were many who thought it would finally tip the scales on the type of movie it is. It ended up bombing big time at the box office, but did win a number of serious awards, mainly for its special effects. But it has been left with a bad reputation, and there is even a bit of a split in the opinions of critics and viewers alike. So that means it's up to us to make the definitive decision about the redeemability of this movie. We're heading back into video game world territory, Christian, and we're checking out Warcraft from 2016.
Uh-huh. Okay, I did hear that it became a movie. This shows how much I know about it. So, yeah, I'm going in completely blind, but I could imagine this would be a film that would divide fans, because I know some pretty obsessed Warcraft fans, so I'm sure they'd have something to say about this too.
There we go, from sci-fi shenanigans to computer game-based fantasy epics.
Well, it's good. I think, as you said, I think we need to go back to video game territory, Trevor. It's been a while. I've been thinking, have you been sick? We haven't had any recommendations for a while, but we've had a few others to get out of our system.
Yeah, I've been trying to space them out. I have been trying to space them out because there's so many.
Whereas me, for this movie, I just went spaced out in general. But anyway.
There we go.
So, okay, so Warcraft 2016. I am game to tackle that for you, Trevor.
Excellent. Now, if anybody does want to check out Warcraft before our next podcast, it is available to stream on Foxtel now, or you can rent or buy it on Google Play, iTunes, or the PlayStation Store. If you're outside of Australia, I'm sure you have many more options available to you. There you go.
We have to track it down some way.
Absolutely. So we would also love to hear from anyone out there. Do you think we were too harsh on Star Crash? Do you think it's so bad that even our comments were too generous? You can let us know. Do you have any comments on the redeemability or otherwise of Warcraft from 2016? Super easy to get in touch with us. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave the comment below this very episode. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook super duper easily, or you can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. We would love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, or even any suggestions. We're always open to whatever you might want to send us.
And as you said, there seems to be a bottomless pit of movies that we hadn't even thought of that seem to be coming to the forefront. So, yeah, we always welcome a recommendation or a challenge.
Absolutely. We're in our 5th year of this, and we still have gotten by on only a few suggestions from other people. So, yeah, there's lots out there, and in some cases, stuff that we're not even aware of. So we definitely would love you to let us know about them. Well, maybe love is a strong word.
Yeah.
It depends on the movie. And anyway, speaking of loving things, Christian Fletcher, I believe a lot of people love your events, and you have a few of them coming up.
Yes, we've got... Oh, a good thing is we've still got Halloween going through until the 31st of October, so we've got a lot of events coming, a lot of horror movie nights. Look, so many to mention, too many to mention here, but like Texas Chainsaw, Night of Living Dead, Evil Dead, Reanimator, Bride of Reanimator. Oh, the list is endless. So that's going right through till the 31st. Then we're bringing back our Bowie's Down Brunswick, which was a whole evening dedicated to David Bowie, in which we run through Fortitude Valley. In Brisbane, and that's on the Saturday, the 4th of November, and that's a fundraiser for Cancer Council. We're rounding up pretty much for the end of the year. We've still got a lot of movies coming up at Metro Arts, Princess Bride, Dirty Dancing, and yeah, you'd probably be best to head to christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook, and you'll see everything that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. And would you also like to plug something else that you've recently put out there to help make sure that your events keep on coming?
Yes, I'm welcoming everybody to take part in my possible crowdfunding campaign. Now, this is the Christian Fletcher fundraising drive where you don't... When you can support my events continuing for next year in return for some great prizes. We've got some movie tickets, prize packs. You can even get an autographed Christian Fletcher headshot, which Trevor seems to be the most chosen reward, which is quite interesting. So if you'd like to help out a local Brisbane cultural icon, I suppose I can call myself,
yes, you can.
Definitely get on to... actually, I'll put a link on my website straight away. You've just reminded me. So head to christianfletcher.com and there will be a link there for the fundraising drive.
I've also put a link through on the Rufus Project Facebook page, so you should be able to find that pretty easily too. And yeah, if you want to have a different sort of fun, you can also check out the other podcast on the Rufus Project Network. Two podcasts makes the network. I don't care what anyone says. And that's What the History, which I do with my wife, Susie. And every fortnight, we release a short little podcast, usually about 20 minutes, featuring two bits of bizarre history to make you say, What the History? We recently celebrated our first anniversary of the podcast, so very, very excited. That's that one's actually live now, if you want to go looking for it. It is basically a double-length episode, but we do have a lot of fun. And it's a good one to listen to if you really want to get a good feel for What the History without having to go through the first year of podcasts. So definitely check that out at wthpod.rufusproject.com. Or, of course, you can find it on Apple Podcasts or your favourite podcast player as well.
I thoroughly recommend that. So from bad movies to bizarre history. So we've kind of got you covered, or from one end to the other.
Absolutely. It's all good fun. And I think on that note, probably time to wrap things up. I don't know if I can thank you for making me watch Star Crash, Christian, but this has been a pretty fun chat, I will admit that.
Definitely. And even if the movies aren't any good, the chat always is. So I look forward to chatting next time. Something totally different, Warcraft.
Absolutely. So come on back and we'll see you all then. Farewell.
For years, our world has been at peace. But something is coming. I can feel it. Dark forces are upon us.
Find these beasts, or whatever they are.
Our world is dying. There is nothing to go back to. If our people are to survive, we must make a home here.
Whatever happens.
If we do not unite, our world will perish.
This doesn't need to happen. There is one who may help us.
For orcs, there is no other life but war. No, but with the humans' help, there could be.
Why are you here?
To save our people.
Can we trust him?
They're beasts. They should all be destroyed.
Are you sure about that?
We'll protect the kingdom. You and I.
You'd side with the humans. Against your own kind.
This is suicide.
We have no choice.
We should attack with full force.
Whatever you plan to do, do it now!
But it's good, what's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Well, it's done. It's happened. The stars are clear. The planets shine. We've won. Oh, some dark force, no doubt, will show its face once more. The wheel will always turn. But for now, it's calm. And for a little time, at least, we can rest.